Good morning. So last time we talked about Dijkstra's algorithm, which we used to solve shortest path, assuming we didn't have any negative weights in the graph. And the basic idea was that we'd look through our vertices in order by the distance we found. We'd look from each vertex we were processing for edges to find new shorter ways to get to each vertex, and process the vertices in order by the shortest distance we found. So we knew once we started processing a vertex, we wouldn't find any shorter paths to it anymore because we had processed everything that was closer already. And every path we'd find since then would be longer. And to implement Dijkstra's algorithm efficiently, we had a practical use for both priority queues and this decrease key operation we mentioned briefly and didn't have you implement. And we find out that when we used an implementation of those priority queues, we got a runtime, which with the ones we actually implemented was v plus e, the quantity log v. And with a variant we didn't have you implement that's considerably more complicated, e plus v log e, v log v. And this was just by noticing that we had repeated operations accessing the priority queue. Yes. Oh, yeah, that would be a problem. Okay. This time with slides. Okay. And you mentioned that all this assumed that we didn't have negative weights. Negative weights are a thing that comes up in some real problems. They obviously don't match some of our intuitions for what a weighted graph is, like, you know, maps don't have negative distances on them. But we could actually solve that problem, but with a different class of algorithms that was considerably less efficient. We couldn't take advantage of this priority queue to have a nice sort the edges in order and process them all once thing that we can do with Dijkstra's algorithm, where we process all edges exactly once. That's with the plus e factor. And we just keep the vertices in base in a sorted order based on the distances we find, which is where the log v factor comes from. And I mentioned that, you know, in the real world, we might say that, well, we can use Dijkstra to solve our real shortest path problems. When we have point to point, we just stop early. And when we have a really big graph, we might do some extra work to make it faster. So we can sort our nodes by, you know, things which are likely to get us further. So if we're thinking of a roadmap, we probably want to prioritize highways as sort of a heuristic thing. We want to prioritize edges that are in the direction we want to go. We can take advantage of geometry in that way. And if we're doing point to point, we can do Dijkstra's algorithm in two directions. And this is actually, you know, it's not asymptotically faster, but it's faster, where you just do two simultaneous Dijkstra's algorithms and hope you meet in the middle. And if you take AI, you'll learn about heuristic search. So there are ways of using heuristics like these things I showed here to speed up a search of a graph, like to find shortest paths. And there are even ways of doing it where you can, if you're careful, take advantage of these heuristics, these, you know, guesses about what's going to be better in a way where you still always find the actual shortest path, where it's just a speed up and it's not something where you're going to sometimes get a slightly wrong answer because, you know, you assumed highways would be better, but they weren't. So that's all I have about shortest path. So before I move on from those topics, any questions about stuff we covered before? So our next topic is going to be traveling salesman problem. So this is another graph problem, and it looks kind of similar to the ones we've seen before, in that it's saying we're going to look at a graph, we're going to find the shortest thing we can to get from point to point. But it has a very different kind of solutions that people use for it. So the basic idea of the problem is that we have some cities, We have cost to travel between the cities, or which, you know, could be, we could think of our dollars or distance or whatever we think is the most important attribute. And we want to find the least cost trip that visits each city exactly once and returns to where we started. So you want, so if we have, our four cities, we want some way of visiting all of these. So this would be a possible answer, or we could have, say we want to do this, you know, anything which visits all the cities and goes in a loop is a fine thing to do. And we're going to say that we have costs for every set of vertices. So this is what I mean by a fully connected graph. So we know that every pair of vertices is connected. We can get between them, and we know that there's a cost for that. You can generalize this problem to a non-fully connected graph. And the basic thing you do is you just say, oh, we'll just add an edge for every place we're missing an edge and just say it has infinite cost. And that's equivalent if we find, and we just say that if we find that that's the best solution, there's just no way of doing this. But generally, we'll think we'll have a fully connected graph, so we're not going to actually care about missing edges anymore, because we're going to just say we have a cost for everything, and we want to find this least cost trip. And we'll just say we want to find just any of the least cost trips if there's ties. And the name comes from the idea that a salesman wants to visit a bunch of cities to sell their products, and you know, they want to plan the most efficient way of doing this. But you know, obviously that's probably not the most common application of this problem, actually. There are some applications in like electronics where this comes up, where you like want to have a, you have a circuit and you want to connect something to all components of the circuit or something like that. So TSP, unlike the problems we've seen before, is very difficult. It's something known as NP-hard. And intuitively, this means that in the worst case, the best way of solving it is essentially as hard as enumerating all the possible answers. So the best solution is not much better than just saying, I'm going to try to go from A to B to C to D, see if that's cheap, how cheap that is, then try A to C to D to B to A, and so on. Just go through all the possibilities, compute the total cost of each one until you find the cheapest one. Now, that's sort of the worst case. Practically speaking, when people have come up with real versions of this problem that either represent like real-world maps or some real-world, say, circuit layout problem, they've usually found that you can actually solve this practically on like tens of thousands of cities. And if you think about sort of our exponential growth, that you can't do by enumerating all possible tours. They're doing something better, but it's something better which, you know, smarter, that doesn't always work. Because we have our worst case is so bad. So there's like definitely some problems where, as far as we know, you essentially have to do the work of enumerating all possible things. We don't have a proof of that, but there's very good mathematical reason to believe that that's the case, or if it isn't, that there's some major algorithm breakthrough we don't know about, which presumably we haven't accidentally discovered in looking at this problem. Okay, and just to formalize this notion of empty hard. So I'm not going to talk about it extremely formally because that's covered in a later class, but there's a lot of problems which are in this category of so-called NP hard. And when you see the description dash hard when we're referring to algorithms, this means, you know, solves everything we call NP in this case. It's NP hard, it means it solves everything we call NP. In that sense, the idea is if you had an efficient solution to this problem, you could use it to efficiently solve every problem in a class of problems that we call NP. So those are the many other problems. In this case, those other problems are the NP class. And that NP class, intuitively, you can define as basically problems that you can verify a solution in polynomial time. So it's something where if I give you a solution, you can say that, yeah, that's a real solution. So for traveling salesmen, sort of the formal version of this is saying that if I give you, you know, I'm giving you a solution to verify would be like saying, here's a tour that's at least this small. You can verify that very easily. But finding a tour that exists that's that small is very hard. But NP, in a sense, means that all problems where you can do that sort of verification, where I can give you a solution and you can say, yeah, that's a real solution that is, in fact, you know, correct. So there are some problems which aren't this way. So you can think, as an example, you can think of like chess is not this way. If I tell you this is the best possible chess move, you cannot verify that easily. Versus if I give you a tour of a graph and say it has this weight, you can easily verify that. Okay, so we're not gonna test you on this, but just a preview of things you'll see in future classes. So we talked about TSP sort of as this, we went to visit every city, and there's a name for this type of path or cycle on a graph. And this is called a Hamiltonian path or a Hamiltonian cycle. So a Hamiltonian path is a path which visits every vertex on a graph exactly once. And a Hamiltonian cycle is a path where a Hamiltonian path where we loop around and go back where we started. So a Hamiltonian path you can think of as we visit every node exactly once and don't go back to where we started. Hamiltonian cycle, we go back to where we started. In addition to that, so every node back once and then back to the beginning. And in this sense, the traveling salesperson problem is find the least weight Hamiltonian cycle. And that's what you might see it referred to as formally. And to give you an idea sort of why formally we say this is really hard even though we have practical solutions, so even detecting whether a graph has a Hamiltonian cycle is this very hard category, that the best way we know of doing that, if you don't have a complete graph, is going to be to actually just enumerate all the possibilities, basically. Just to tell whether there is a cycle that visits every node exactly once. Like not to find the least weight one. Just, is there one at all if I don't have all the edges? So since we know that our best way of solving something like traveling salesman is basically enumerating all the possibilities, what does that look like and how bad is that really? So let's sort of write down what our algorithm is given that. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, you gave me my traveling salesman problem, you gave me a list of cities, you gave me all the weights, so sort of my input is I have a table of city 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, going to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I have the weights from each pair of cities. So the weight from 1 to 2 and the weight from 1 to 3, and so on. I have just a matrix of those, and that's what you're giving me. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose a starting city, and then I'm going to try each possible other city. So I'm going to say, I'm going to arbitrarily choose a starting city. Note that it doesn't matter which one I choose, and I only need to do this once. Everything else, I need to enumerate all the possibilities, but if the best tour is A, B, C, D, A, where my starting city is A, then that's going to have the same weight as B, C, D, A, B. So it doesn't matter which starting city I choose. I can just choose one and not care about testing any of the others. So I can at least save that little bit of work. So I don't need to quite enumerate all the lists. I can just arbitrarily say, I'm going to start and end at A, because that's going to be the same as starting and ending at B. I just move over to wherever I find A in that list of all the cities. But once I've chosen my starting city, then I just try each possible unused city that's next, and each one that's still unused, each one that's still unused, until I run out. After that, I've chosen all the possibilities. So I get my list of cities in some order, and I see if that's a shorter path, a shorter cycle. I guess I should write down cycle. So what? That. And I just keep track of the shortest I found so far. When I've done enumerating all the possibilities, I output the shortest C. And if we count up what we're doing here, well, when we choose x2, there's n minus 2 possibilities. When we choose x3, so n minus 1, then n minus 2, then n minus 3, then n minus 4, all the way down to when we get to 1. Fortunately, we could just choose one possible starting city. We didn't have to try all n. So this ends up with n minus 1 factorial. So it's big theta of n factorial, which is really, really bad. So from a big theta perspective, this is worse than big theta of 2 to the n. And that makes sense if you think about what 2 to the n means. So 2 to the n is the number of, you know, possible choices of n things without regard to order. But we care about the order. So we're choosing from n things, caring about the order. So that's where we get n factorial, and that is in fact asymptotically worse than 2 to the n squared, 2 to the n. But at least it works. We will definitely get the right answer, and we can actually probably implement this. So we can write code which implements this. Apologies for, probably should split this into two slides. But it implements this. It's not intuitive how you write this code. So like reading this picture, you might say, great, I'll just have n nested for loops. But obviously if I don't fix the n, that's not really a thing you're going to write. Because, you know, and also if n is like 20, you're probably not going to write 20 nested for loops and be happy about it. So what the typical strategy I would use to implement this instead is have a recursive function. So here I have a recursive function where I have a base case. And my base case is, you know, I've constructed a partial tour, and my partial tour is now includes everything. So in that case, I add the starting node, you know, is it small, is it smallest, and test if it's smallest, and if so, I set my best tour, and then I undo adding the starting node. And I have my recursive case where I select the vertices we haven't visited. So this is unused cities. So for all unused cities, add it, see if we can do see what we can do, and then remove it. And the see what we can do is just a recursive call to this testTours function, which just tries to add one thing recursively until we get to the full length. So does this idea of how you enumerate all the possibilities make sense? This is one way of implementing it. There are others. As you know, anything you can do recursively, you can do iteratively. So there's an iterative way of doing this instead of a recursive way. I find the recursive way just easiest to understand for I want to enumerate all the permutations, which is what we're doing here. Okay. So any questions about this? Okay, so yeah, this is our basic solution, and this will work. It's just going to be slow. So the question is like, well, practically speaking, how slow? So I told you it's asymptotically really, really bad. But we know that when we're dealing with really small numbers, that maybe the big theta doesn't matter, right? Maybe it only starts mattering when we have big numbers. So how big is this n minus 1 factorial, which is the number of times we're going to be running this is its smallest code? Well, if we have 20 cities, it's greater than 10 to the 16. And if we have 30 cities, it's greater than 10 to the 30. So this is really big if we think of, say, that our computers can execute like order like 10 to the 9, 10 to the 10th instructions per second. So if you think about that, this means that do we take like 10 to the 20 CPU seconds to do 30 cities? Like, this quickly becomes really impractical with large numbers, with, you know, not even that large numbers of cities. So one question you might have is, well, you told me it's like you essentially have to enumerate all the possibilities. Are there optimizations that at least like give us a better worst case? And the answer is yes. Like that this solution, which is probably the simplest to understand, is not the fastest among things which have, you know, the best worst case. So if you only care about the worst case, there's a better general algorithm, which is still really expensive, which is big theta of n squared 2 to the n. We're not going to teach it because it involves something called dynamic programming, which is covered in algorithms and would take us probably a full week to teach adequately. But if we think about the number of operations, this is bad, but it's a lot more manageable. So I'll give you a high level overview of what the faster algorithm does. As I said, we're not testing you on it. We're not going to have you implement it, but to give an idea of what the speed up comes from. And the idea is that if we know what the best way to visit cities 1, 2, 3, 4, starting at 1 and ending at 4. So we solve this subproblem where I say, I want to visit this set of cities, starting at this city, ending at this city. So in this case, there are two possibilities. We could do 1, 2, 3, 4, or 1, 3, 2, 4. And if I know that the best solution is, in fact, 1, 3, 2, 4, then I know that I better do, if I want to add 5 to that, that maybe 1, 3, 2, 4, 5, 1 is a good idea. But definitely 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1 is not, because this 1, 2, 3, 4 we know is going to be longer than that, and everything else is the same. So this better algorithm organizes things so they can prune based on knowing, oh, 1, 3, 2, 4 is better. Let's not even test anything involving 1, 2, 3, 4 at the beginning, for example. So they can avoid checking a whole bunch of possibilities, and then it ends up being asymptotically enough possibilities to be better, but not great, because for 30 things, 10 to the 11 operations is still pretty bad. And when you get up to 50, you know, we're kind of in the range of, again, of not like, you know, billions of CPU seconds sort of thing. So if this is the best we can do in the worst case, clearly those good results I told you about before, we were getting, you know, solving on tens of thousands of cities, where if you think about what 2 to the 10,000 turns into, clearly we aren't doing using this algorithm consistently. We're using heuristics. So we're making guesses as to how we're going to find good solutions. And you might say, well, I know how to use heuristics to do things that don't always work. So one idea you might have is that I'm just going to take the shortest weight edge each time. And you can certainly do that, but the problem is when you get an answer that isn't optimal because you need to take a slightly longer path the first time and then you have shorter options, then how would you like find the shorter one? So you can certainly find answers that are okay using these heuristics, but how do we make sure we get the optimal answer? Right, that's the hard part. So one idea for that people use when doing trying to find optimal answers is something called branch and bound. So our central algorithm is still, let's enumerate many, many possible tours. But we want to prune out some possibilities early. We want to say, just like I told you with that intuition earlier, that, oh, 1, 2, 3, 4 is not something you care about. We want to eliminate all of those because we know we've learned that it's not going to be a right answer. So one generic idea for doing this is to track two numbers. So one is like we've been doing before. We keep track of what the best weight we found so far is. Because we want to know, well, did we find something better? But another thing we can track is we can look at a lower bound based on what we found so far. So we say, I've chosen edges, so I have, you know, two edges to add. I can say, just what's the least I could do with the remaining edges? What is the, you know, least cost I could possibly have? What's some lower bound on that? So one example is, let's say I've chosen 1, 2, 4, 3 already. So I'm looking at tours where I start by going 1, 2, then 4, then 3, and I have to go to 5 and 6 and 7, let's say. You know, I have a whole bunch of extra cities to visit. So I know I've done 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, 1 to 2 to 4 to 3, and I have 5, 6, 7, 8, let's say. So one idea is I can say, okay, the best I could possibly do is I just look at all the cities I need to visit so far and I find the shortest edge from each of them. So, you know, I find out which is the shortest edge. It might be end up being the case that this shortest edge from each of the things I need to visit, you know, doesn't actually construct a tour, right? For example, in this case, let's say the blue edges are my shortest edges from each thing. In this case, I'm saying between 7 and 8, the edge from 7 to 8 is the shortest, and the edge from 8 to 7 is the shortest. So clearly this is not an actual tour I can get with that, because I need to go from 8 to 1 or 6 or something like that. But at least I know I can't possibly do better than taking the shortest edge out of each node. Like, that's the best I could possibly do. And so I can come up with a lower bound, a minimum cost that I could possibly have given what I've started with. And based on this idea, I can say, okay, if that minimum cost is greater than the best cost I've seen so far, I shouldn't bother. I know that I'm already doomed. I'm not going to find something shorter. And I don't need to consider how do I order 5, 6, 7, and 8. I can just stop and say, doesn't matter how I order them, it's going to be too long. So this is something that people do when they care about solving the problem exactly. So here we can still solve the problem exactly. We can find the best possible solution. And we can still prune out a lot of things. And it turns out in many practical versions of this problem, this is why we can solve it in a sane amount of time, even though from a worst case analysis point of view, the potential number of possibilities is really bad. And I showed you sort of one lower bound we could construct here, which helps us, prune things out. And this can be combined with other heuristics. So one thing we could have is if we have other ways of saying you couldn't possibly do better than this, things that are kind of like I have to do at least as bad as taking the shortest edge from everything, then you can use those. And you can also take advantage of other things you know about the graph. So for example, you might say, well, I should try cities close to each other first. And if you're using something like branch and bound, that's going to help you because that's going to make this quantity be lower when you start out. And so later on, when you're looking at other possibilities, you'll be able to quickly eliminate them because you've already explored the close cities, which are usually shorter. So if you combine this branch and bound idea with let's try to enumerate the tours in, based on guesses about what's going to be the best thing, you can still come up with an optimal answer, but also take advantage of those guesses and have it really affect your runtime. And if you don't care about coming up with the optimal answer, of course, you can just make those guesses and say, hopefully this is good enough, and get an approximate answer. So one thing is trying cities that are close to each other. If you're working on like a real map where you know you have like distances that you can compute with x and y coordinates, you can use that to take advantage to easily compute sort of bounds on costs, because like if you draw a line you need to, or like a circle you need to go through that. Also, it turns out that there are what is known as approximation algorithms for TSP if you know something about the weights that have been chosen. So if they're sufficiently normal, so one example is if going from A to B is always shorter than going from A to C to B, which intuitively should be true like for real world costs, but we could have graphs where that's not. But if that's true, then there's in fact good approximation algorithms which give you a solution that is guaranteed to be within a certain factor of a solution. So you can use these ideas both to sort of say, well, I don't have the best answer, but I have an answer which is like pretty good. And you can also use them to help you with pruning bad solutions, like because you can at least start out with a best known cost, which is like within a factor of two very quickly, rather than having to hope that heuristics get you there. Okay, so as I mentioned, people have done TSP on real things. And the current record is from 2006, which shows that probably just people aren't too interested in trying bigger versions of this problem, maybe because there's not many bigger cases of TSP that are realistic. But this was an 85,900 city tour, which came from a 1980s circuit production problem where they wanted to come up with the shortest path to cut through a bunch of circuits on a chip. And that was solved with many years of CPU time across multiple computers working at once, but it was solved. And if you think about sort of our exponential bounds, everything we've seen so far, we have like 2 to the n in there, and 2 to the 85,000, clearly you couldn't actually do. So there was something nice enough about this problem that made it practical to solve using techniques like these. And I think it's generally been found that real versions of the problem, you know, as long as you're only in the tens of thousands, that heuristics like this tend to work, even though, you know, if we're trying deliberately to construct bad examples, you can construct examples where those heuristics won't work. You know, even for like maps where you have like x and y coordinates. Okay, so that brings me to mentioning our labs on graphs, which are next week. So the pre-lab is topological sort. So it's that let's remove vertices to find out the ordering of them in a directed graph, which, as I said, to implement efficiently, you'll just track in degrees instead of actually tracking what edges did I remove, what vertices did I remove. The in-lab is to implement naive traveling salesperson. By naive, I mean basically this algorithm. One where we just enumerate all the possibilities. So obviously, we won't be having you run that on anything particularly big because it wouldn't complete. And the post lab is to try out and write a report about some ways of making that faster. Okay, so that's traveling salesperson. So our next topic is going to be about spanning trees. So we're going to go back to the world of graph algorithms where we actually have good solutions. So with traveling salesperson, it's all, well, you can't really solve it. You have to do something really slow that only kind of works for a small number of vertices. And you make all these guesses, hope that it like you can rely on like things being like maps. Here, we're going to go back to where we were with Dijkstra's, where we're going to get optimal answers with nice, low runtimes that are like V log V sort of runtimes, V log E. So first, a definition. So if I have a connected graph, then it has a spanning tree, which is what I'm going to call a subgraph. So a subgraph means that I take a graph and I choose a subset of its edges and vertices, and I have another graph. That other graph is a subgraph of the original graph. In the case of a spanning tree, our subgraph is going to have the same vertices, so we're not going to get rid of any vertices, but we are going to get rid of edges. So we're going to get rid of edges such that it's still connected. So we started out connected, we're going to end up connected, we're not going to get rid of any edges, which makes the graph unconnected, and it's going to have no cycles. And this is the same thing as saying that it's a tree. So this is the definition of a spanning tree. Note that this spanning tree is not unique. If I start off with this graph here, there are several different spanning trees. these three, in fact. That it turns out in that graph, I can remove any edge, and I end up with a spanning tree. And there's this general algorithm, which says, how do we construct spanning trees? So you start with your connected graph. And then you just choose an edge that, if you remove it, won't disconnect the graph. And you keep doing that until you can't remove any more edges. And once you've done that, you have a spanning tree. That, you know, the non-obvious part here is that doing this gets rid of cycles. So the intuition for how do we know it gets rid of cycles is, well, if we had a cycle, then it must be the case that we can remove one of the edges in the cycle and the graph's still connected. And so that's why this gets rid of all the cycles. And to be careful, I should point out a connected and undirected graph, since what we're doing doesn't really make sense for directed graphs. So to give an example, here's a graph, and here are its spanning trees. So it turns out that the edges we can remove are all the ones that are in the cycle. Everything else, the remaining edge, would disconnect the graph. So removing this edge, this would disconnect the graph. But any of these edges won't. But once we remove them, there's no more edges to remove. You know, that would actually disconnect the graph. So we have this set of possible spanning trees. So spanning trees are, in fact, surprisingly useful. So one way of thinking about why you'd care about a spanning tree is that a spanning tree, because it's a tree, gives you one path to get to everything. So if you like think about, I want to construct like a transportation network, well, this is a way of saying, here's how I get one path to everything, which is the minimum I need, and everything I add after that, you know, is extra. And maybe transportation network isn't the right example. You can think of like a circuit, where I only really care about one path to everything. This is tells you how to construct that sort of thing in a way, you know, where you have, you know, the minimum number of paths you need. So that's our intuition for why we care about spanning trees, is that, you know, it gives us one path to everything. And given that, we might want to say, you know, we have a possible circuit and we want to find a way to connect everything up. We'll use this minimum spanning tree idea because we need one connection to everything. The spanning tree idea. We'll have this minimum spanning tree idea where we want the best possibilities of those. So we say, I want to connect everything. I want some way to do that. How do I do that in the best possible way? So the minimum spanning tree is that we want the sum of the weights of each of the edges in the tree to be smallest. So we're going to have weights, which could be like, if we're laying out a circuit, could be like, how much wire do I need, or something like that. So I can say, what's the least expensive way to make everything be connected? So note that the minimum spanning tree might not be unique. We might have ties. So we're going to have multiple minimum spanning trees for the same graph, but there's the same idea. It's a spanning tree. And we want to choose from all possible spanning trees to get the smallest weight one. And there's going to be two main algorithms we'll talk about for minimum spanning trees. And they're both greedy, and more obviously greedy than algorithms we've seen before. So I like told you that like Dijkstra kind of looks greedy, because like when we choose to go get to a node, we never take that back. Here, we're going to choose edges that we're going to say should be part of the minimum spanning tree. So we're not going to work by deleting edges. We're going to work by adding edges from starting with an empty almost spanning tree. And once we've added an edge to that, we're never going to take that decision back. So the tricky part is always just going to be, you know, not adding the edge itself, but figuring out what order to choose edges in. So we're going to sort the edges in an order so that we don't end up with cycles and we still have the minimum cost. And in addition to choosing that order, you know, if you actually wanted to like know that this works for real, you'd want to prove that you know, you actually got the optimal answer. We're going to kind of gloss over how you'd prove that. You could probably figure out how to do it by induction. We're not going to go in detail on that, but you know, that's usually the tricky part with a greedy algorithm, is that you do something that's pretty obvious, but it's not, what's not obvious is that you really get the best possible answer, that there's not some weird case where, because you're like choosing the least thing, that ends up not being the best thing because of something else in the graph. But it turns out that there are algorithms where we're going to do something which looks like we're just choosing the best thing, and that just works. And that's what I'll talk about next time.